You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series.
Keynote session Q&A with Ankar Gatte, Yaron Brook, and Tal Svani. This lecture was recorded as part of Ayn Rand Conference Global's How to Put a Dent in the Universe, a conference examining an intellectual's role in society and how it can shape the world.
So we have just about 15 minutes for questions now. So if we can bring all of our panelists back. If you want to ask a question, we're using the Q&A panel on Zoom. We've got a bunch of questions in already, and I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to combine some questions from a number of different people that are related. So Ankar, I think this one is mainly for you because you talked a lot about your experience in choosing an intellectual career and what factors went into it. There's a question about what your college experience was like in terms of philosophy and the instruction that you got. Related question was, how much was dedicated to objectivism and how much to other philosophers? And another related question was, what were some of the most rewarding and challenging subjects you studied?
Okay, so I picked an undergraduate, I went to the University of Toronto. I picked it because it's very good in philosophy. And my undergraduate education, I view as really good. It was challenging. I got C's. So the grading A, B, C. I got C's on my first essays and papers. And when I got the comments, I said, yeah, this probably deserved a C. My high school wasn't very good. So I didn't know how to write and how to construct an argument. So I learned all these kinds of things in undergraduate school. So if you pick a good undergraduate school, you can learn a lot. And I learned stuff less so in economics because the field's a little stranger. So I learned Keynesian economics, but there's a lot of things wrong in it. And in philosophy, they still have a view, there's competing theories. So you get a broader range. In economics, when I took it as an undergrad, it's like, here's the answer. And it's not actually an answer. So you don't learn the field nearly as much and the questions. But a good undergraduate education in philosophy, you can learn a lot. And then I learned objectivism on the side, but I was very conscious that I have to devote a lot of time to it. So I had one day a week where it was, I'm not doing my class stuff. I'm learning objective and how it relates to things, to what Plato's arguing and what Hume is arguing. So, but I had a very conscious focus that I'm not being taught objectivism, so I have to try to learn it. But this is part of why I started going to ARI, like start offering classes and I'll take them because I need them. So that's a little bit, at least to some of the question. I don't want to spend way too much time given we only have 50 minutes.
Okay, we have some questions coming in Spanish and again, I'll combine a few questions here. So, there's some questions about Latin America. So now we're turning a bit to politics here, but it's related to how ideas influence a culture. So socialism has had a lot of success in spreading ideas. You know, governments identify with the philosophy. Universities are openly anti-capitalist. Rand's philosophy is not taught. How can you counteract those things? And a related question is there sort of a fundamental premise that objectivism is advocating versus fundamental premises that are being advocated by, say, Marxism? And, you know, how do you combat those?
So, I mean, how do you deal with the fact that everything, particularly in Latin America, really all the institutions are aligned against the ideas of objectivism? The only way to combat them is what we've been discussing, that is produce a generation of intellectuals who will start articulating better ideas in the culture. You're not going to convince your priest. You're not going to convince your Marxist professor. You're not going to change the minds of the intellectuals that are currently doing their work in Latin America, being influenced by a completely different set of ideas. You're going to have to replace them. You're going to have to take it upon yourself, if that's what you want to do with your life, or, you know, recruit others around you to becoming intellectuals who replace those and who offer the culture in these countries better ideas, a better explanation about the world, a true explanation about the world. And with regard to whether objectivism has something more fundamental, different than Marxism, yes, really everything. Objectivism's whole approach is different than Marxism, from its epistemological foundations to its ethical foundations. It's not like we just reject socialism and communism. It's not like we just reject the political manifestation of Marxism. We reject the whole methodology and the underlying premises of the Marxist ideology, and Ayn Rand replaces them with a philosophy of reason.
Okay, getting back to questions about education, can you comment on the value of getting an education in philosophy, you know, in a college or university today, as opposed to alternatives? Is there a way that you can study philosophy on your own? Are the hazards of studying philosophy in the way it's traditionally taught in current colleges and universities, you know, does it pose an obstacle to really learning the field, or are there values that you can get by pursuing that kind of route?
Again, I'd say if you have to research the universities and what the faculty are, what kind of courses are being offered. But I think there's many good departments where you can learn the field. You're not going to learn objectivism, but you can learn the field and you'll learn the arguments. So this is not an issue of conclusions. It's the issue of, do you have good arguments for your conclusions? And even if you have a sense that someone like Marx is wrong, like there's something when, and there is a perspective from, you're advocating socialism, it's failed everywhere. Like, how can this be right? But if the arguments being offered, including like, this is the moral system, and shouldn't we be striving to be moral, and everybody agrees, from each according to his abilities, to each according to his need. Like, everybody thinks that's right. So isn't something like socialism right? If you can't answer the arguments, then you can't do the job of an intellectual, and you'll learn the arguments in a good philosophy program. And it's often the best to learn it from people who in some way or other think it's right. So you're getting the best, strongest case for Plato or for Kant or for Hume or for Marx. Like, I took a class from a Marxist on Marx. And then if you can answer that, then you really are in a position to think, yeah, I know it's wrong. Not I've got a sense it's wrong. I know it's wrong. And here's the best arguments for it, and here's the answers to it. So there, and you could do that learning on your own, but there's very few people who are autodidacts in that regard. It's why there's the whole profession of teachers. It's a lot easier. There's some exceptions. You'll meet people who've taught themselves a subject and so on, but it's very hard to do.
Okay, we got another question in Spanish. I'll answer this one. Should I begin reading the novels first or for the new intellectual? I would say start with the novels first, for sure, because that you really get a picture of Ayn Rand's whole perspective on life, and they're great, you know, they're great stories to read. So definitely start with the novels. Tal, this one is for you. Where do you see the OAC in terms of the number of students and faculty members in the next 10 to 20 years? And I know you could talk for half an hour about this, but we only have a few minutes.
I'll just say that part of a strategic coach session that I've done, which is a consulting firm that I took part in their program, they do this future exercise where they ask you to say what is the most important metric that you want to grow, and then by 10 times, and then put a date in the future and write how you did it in past tense. That's a very powerful way to try to visualize and think about a future. So I chose the number of students in OAC, and I wrote a whole page about what needs to happen in order for us to not have 120 students in OAC, but have 1200. And so that's my goal, 10 times more than what we have today. That's what we're working on. And we're building the foundation, all the way from positioning OAC and what it is, Just to say a word about that, we're not thinking about OAC just as a three-year program. We're thinking about it as a prolonged process of supporting intellectuals through that, throughout their career, all the way to the network that we call ICON, the intellectual conference that we usually do every time after OCON. So yeah, that's what I'm thinking about 10 times bigger than where we are today in about 5 to 6 years. So we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about where do we get information about the OAC. Could we just quickly put up the slide for this and put the link into the chat? So we're actually going to be having an information session about the OAC program and about what it looks like to consider a career as an intellectual. This will be happening in about a week, and you can register at einrand.org/OAC-info. So if you sign up at this registration link, you know, you're not obligated to attend the event, but you'll get information. And if you're not able to come at this particular time, we'll share the recording. So if you want more information about the program, go to that link. We're putting it in the chat in Zoom. So copy that and you can sign up for the event. We have time for probably one more question, maybe two more questions. Let's see. Well, maybe this is a, can you say something about why it is that it's so hard for Ayn Rand and for objectivism to get a hearing in the academic world? The way the question puts it is it's generally ignored by philosophers, by professional philosophers. Why is that? And what would be required to change that?
I mean, I can say a little bit, which is that she viewed herself, and I think correctly, as she's challenging the fundamental ideas in philosophy for like the past 2000 years. She's on the side of Aristotle, and philosophy is often looked at as it's a duel between Plato and Aristotle. And Plato has dominated in the form of Kant, as Yaron touched on, for 200 plus years, but it's even more like Christianity has dominated the way the Western mind thinks in fundamental terms. And the Renaissance and Enlightenment were a time where they're trying to free themselves from the Christian framework, but it didn't succeed. And so there's a way in which that mentality has shaped things for centuries upon centuries. And she's saying it's all wrong. So that people are going to be find that easy to digest. Like everything you think's wrong in fundamental terms, that's very hard. And this is why you replace them. You don't convince them. And this historically, this is what the Enlightenment is like. The Enlightenment figures were what's being taught in the schools today and the universities is all wrong. Not like wrong here, we've got to tinker with this and we've got to change this textbook a little bit. It's like Hume, for instance, like sweep everything into the fire. It's all wrong. And what you had is they replaced, the Enlightenment won in a certain sense, is they replaced the people at the time who were thought of as this is education, this is the schools and so on. And something similar, I think, has to happen with Rand because it's so radically different.
Okay, why don't we make this the final question? How do you think about generalists versus specialists? If you're interested in all subjects, you know, how do you decide to settle on a specialization, and how is this related to philosophy, which is a very broad field?
So I'll take this one. I think for most people, specialization makes sense. It's hard enough to really, you know, know a subject in depth without pretending that you know lots of subjects in depth. It's very hard to be able to hold the context of a lot of subjects and going in depth. And very few people actually can go in depth on a lot of subjects. Mostly, you know, I'm a generalist. We know a little bit about a lot of things, but to really change people's minds about a particular topic, you need to be able to know that topic inside out. Now, all intellectuals, no matter whether they're generalists or experts, need to know some philosophy. The philosophers need to you know, that is their area of expertise. But all intellectuals have to have enough knowledge in philosophy to be able to apply it to their particular area of expertise well and correctly and in a way that is convincing people. But I'm a big advocate of specialization, of seeing people go out there and take on particular issues and really focus on those issues and know those issues inside out. Maybe a good example of that right now in terms of intellectual activists is the work that Alex Epstein is doing in the field of energy. I mean, he really has become a leading voice for a perspective on energy, on climate change that is... that comes from a philosophical understanding, comes from objectivism, but he knows the issues involved in this particular area inside out and in depth, and therefore can debate anybody and can make a rational argument in areas that are fairly technical that a generalist would not be able to do. And I think in the long run, if we're gonna really change the world, we need to be specialist. If you think about the leading public intellectuals in the world out there, while they might comment on a generalist from a generalist perspective, they all really made their mark as specialists. If you think about Peterson, who's a psychologist, or Harris, they each had a particular area in which they made their name and in which they really elevated themselves to the status of a public intellectual.
Okay, well, I think we're right at time here. So I just want to say two more things before we take our break. Some people were asking about, you know, which novels they should start with or which books they should read. We actually have a program that I wanted to mention. We can put a link in the chat if people could do that. For if you're a student and you are interested in getting a copy of one of Ayn Rand's novels or some of her nonfiction books, you can go to a form basically and fill it out, and we'll send you a digital copy of that book. So if we could put the free books link into the chat, that's something you can do. And again, there's you can get more information about the OAC program to learn more about the things we've been talking about.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.